So what do the future of hurricanes look like? We saw the devastation caused by Hurricane Irma, Maria, and Harvey in the Keys, Puerto Rico, and Houston. And research by NASA scientists shows that, well, they're getting worse. Dr. Tim Hall has been studying extreme weather events for years and their growing intensity linked to climate change. He's a senior research scientist with NASA and an adjunct professor at Columbia University. Hall is going to be speaking at the CIC co-working space in Wynwood tonight at 6 o'clock in an event put on by the Miami Climate Alliance. And he joins us now in studio. Dr. Hall, Tim, thank you so much for joining us. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, Lewis. It's a pleasure to be here.
So you've been conducting this research on climate change and extreme storm events for years now. But what evidence do we have that change in climate is leading to hurricanes getting worse?
I like to order the relationship between hurricanes and climate in terms of what we know with the most degree of certainty and what maybe is possibly alarming, but we don't know quite as well. And one of the things that's related to hurricane hazard, it's really quite certain. The most robust projection of a changing climate is sea level rise. I mean, simply put, warmer seawater takes up more volume, so the water rises as the oceans warm. And even if hurricanes weren't changing in intensity, which we'll probably talk about, and they are, but even if they weren't, the same winds blowing over a higher baseline will just push water deeper into land, and you get worse flooding events.
So we see if the water is rising and it's also warming, and warm water is part of the fuel for hurricanes.
Yes, absolutely, yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know, that in of itself we see. But do we see hurricanes, what, getting bigger? They are stronger, more rain events? I mean, what's happening?
You're right at it. Those are elements 2 and 3 in my sort of hierarchy of what we know best. The second being rain events. Warmer air holds more water in the vapor form. And so when the conditions are right, as they are in a mature hurricane, that water is available to rain. Even aside from hurricanes, the amount of rain that's falling in fewer but more intense events across the U.S. and, in fact, across the world is increasing. So we're really getting in a situation where we're getting – some places it's getting wetter, some places it's getting drier. But everywhere, when it rains in less frequent but more intense events. And that's actually worse for flooding. You know, it doesn't give the land time to absorb the rainfall, and it just runs off in flooding.
How would you describe the level of research that's being done right now to better understand this correlation? I mean, how many different groups, countries are doing this research?
Sure. This is a quite active area of climate change research. So there are hundreds of scientists working on, you know, the question of hurricanes and climate and extreme weather and climate, and not just public sector government labs, university researchers, absolutely, but there are private sector companies that have a lot of skin in the game, say insurance and reinsurance companies and the various private sector modeling companies that feed into that industry. And they all have teams and teams of people working on this and around the world.
So when we look at, let's say if we looked at the last 100 years of storms or, you know, whatever we have recorded that we can point to, can you say at one point you started to see storms growing or changing in some way, maybe the number of storms, the intensification of the storms? Is there some point you could say, look, here's where we start to see the shift? Can we link it to what we've seen in the changing climate?
Yeah. I mean, it's hard. It's a hard problem because, by definition, an intense storm is a rare event. So you're looking at the changing frequency of rare events, and you need to sort of accumulate enough events to see a trend in that. But now the signal is pretty clearly popping through the noise. You can look in several, you know, of the major hurricane breeding grounds around the world, and we're seeing that there's not necessarily a change in the frequency of the storms, but there's a change in the fraction that are reaching the highest levels of intensity.
Getting up to Category 5.
Exactly, yeah. 3, 4, 5, what we call major hurricanes. And possibly down the road in categories, well, not categories, but at levels we've never seen before historically.
And that goes back to looking at, you know, the wind speed, the flooding, and all of these other aspects of what a storm is. And you're seeing these things get worse.
Yes. So there's several aspects that go into the hazard of a hurricane. One is just the direct wind, and that's a hazard by blowing down structures, say. Another, and then there's the flooding, which can be driven either by the surge, which is the mountain of water the wind pushing over the ocean drives towards the coastline, and then, of course, the rainfall. Both of those things contribute to flooding. All three of those things are increasing. The surge hazard is increasing because of sea level rise. primarily. The rain hazard is increasing because there's moister air and warmer air, so there's more moisture available for rainfall. And the wind hazard is increasing because warmer seas are essentially the fuel for hurricanes. It's a little more complicated than that. There's some T's to cross and I's to dot. But basically, warmer seawater is the fuel for hurricanes, and that drives stronger hurricanes as the oceans warm.
When you look at last year, Harvey, Irma, Maria, you look at those storms, do they show you any of these things that you're discussing? Was there anything unique about those storms that you say, wow, we're seeing this?
Well, there was a lot unique about 2017. It was, you know, a season for the record books for sure. And you can talk about Irma, Harvey, and Maria. In fact, other storms too. I mean, people don't, it doesn't get as much attention, but Hurricane Ophelia actually hit Ireland, which is almost unprecedented in the well-documented historic record. But let's get to the major ones, Irma, Harvey, and Maria. Those three storms, in terms of dollar losses, were the three biggest dollar losses in the U.S. And three in the top five in the historic record. Harvey was only behind Katrina. Harvey is a great example of our ability to see a climate change signal in its rainfall. There have been recent studies that can directly relate the amount of rain in Harvey to the increasing warmth in the Gulf. And if you trace back the energy equation from rainfall to condensation to evaporation to heat in the Gulf waters, you find that about a third of Harvey's rainfall is related to the warming Gulf in the past several decades.
Something else I had read, too, is that one of the other things, especially I think with Harvey, is that, one, it moved a little bit further north, was more powerful as it moved north than many storms in the past, but also is the fact that storms now seem to be, as they go into the Gulf, kind of get stuck there sometimes, then they just grow.
That's a great point, and that gets to another relationship between climate and hurricanes that maybe is a little bit less uncertain, but very interesting and possibly alarming. And that is that the possibility of changes in hurricane trajectories, their paths, and the possibility of more meandering storms, storms that take oddball left-hand turns or right turns or just stall out like Harvey did. I mean, basically, Harvey just stalled over just off the Texas coast for several days, not moving very much at high intensity, and acted as a conveyor belt, dumping warm Gulf waters right onto Houston. And so there have been recent studies that suggest that this is a pattern related to the changing global circulation of the planet as the climate warms, and that it's resulting in slower, more meandering hurricane tracks. And generally slower moving hurricanes, not less intense, I mean how they translate more slowly, that is more hazardous because if you just think about surge, for example, you just have a longer period of time where the hurricane winds are blowing water toward the coast, or a longer period of time where it's, you know, dumping seawater onto an adjacent city in terms of rain.
We also saw this year a tropical system that formed actually the week before hurricane season started.
Alberto.
And we've seen in the past that was actually going back into the early mid-aughts. We saw storms that all of a sudden were coming in December at one point. We know hurricane season doesn't have to fit the calendar, right, but we set the calendar because that's usually when they happen. What are we seeing in the shift of hurricanes coming earlier, staying later?
Yeah, so Alberto is unusual because it happened, before the season started in May. It's not unprecedented. There have been a few storms, named storms in May, and also past the end of the season in December. But, you know, as the oceans warm, the geographic extent of the region that's warm enough to sustain a hurricane, and also the time extent in the season expands. So there's a good reason to believe that you would have a longer hurricane season, and also a hurricane climatology that would push further and further north, the possibility of having higher intensity hurricanes, you know, at mid-latitudes.
We are talking with Dr. Tim Hall. He's been studying extreme weather events for years. They're growing, especially hurricanes, they're growing intensity due to climate change. He's a senior research scientist with NASA and an adjunct professor at Columbia University. As mentioned before, he is going to be speaking tonight at the CIC co-working space in Wynwood. That's at 6 o'clock. This is an event put on by Miami Climate Alliance. Tim, you work with reinsurance companies on evaluating risk assessments because of hurricanes and extreme storm events. How has their calculus changed as a result of these growing storms?
Yeah, I mean, reinsurance companies have skin in the game, right? So they follow this stuff. They fund some of the research. They have their own in-house research teams. They hire research from private sector modeling companies whose expertise is catastrophe risk analysis. And, you know, they know that their ability to survive as a company down the road depends on their ability to project the risk and to adjust their portfolios and to pick and choose, you know, what type of properties they want to insure. And so they're aware of it. Their contracts typically renew annually. So some of the things they can do are decide, you know, which types of contracts they want to pursue down the road if they think that, you know, certain portfolios are too risky now in a warming climate with increased sea level.
So your experience, I mean, insurance companies, there's no debate with them on the issue of climate change and, you know, how we see changes in weather events. No debate with them. Did any of them express concerns over sea level risk, the increased asset exposure to the flooding that we see here, especially in South Florida?
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, when you talk about changes in hurricane hazard, like the meteorology of hurricanes and climate, we really have to step back a minute and say, well, why is it that you know, that there are increased dollar losses? Well, primarily it's because there's increased exposure. There's more stuff in harm's way, expensive stuff in harm's way. You know, we've had some zoning, you know, changes in zoning regulations, so we have better structures that can withstand hurricane wind better and maybe flooding also. But there's definitely more stuff in harm's way.
Interesting. As you said, you know, a lot of these contracts renew annually. Yeah. So trying to project way in the future. But, I mean, I've heard about, you know, banks thinking about at some point in South Florida anyway, they may stop giving out 25, 30-year mortgages because some areas are at great risk. But with insurance companies, with these groups that you've dealt with anyway, how are they looking at the far future? How are they looking 15, 20, 30 years down the road?
Well, I wish I could say for sure that, you know, a company looks, you know, 20 or 30 years down the road. I'm not really sure that time horizon is, you know, front and center for much of any company, unfortunately. You know, a company that's been around many decades, of course, wants to try to ensure that it will be around a decade or two more. Many of these companies are mature, sober companies that have been in the business for quite a while. So, you know, they will adjust their portfolios and what type of, you know, contracts they want to issue, you know, according to the risk they see. And then they actually, some of their R&D teams are staffed with atmospheric scientists and people who have been trained academically in the subject. So,
There was controversy surrounding President Trump's nomination of Jim Bernstein. He had previously expressed doubts that humans were a cause of climate change. Has his position changed?
His position has changed, actually. And, you know, and I think, you know, he deserves credit for that. Yes, it's true. Bridenstine was a congressman from Oklahoma. And in the past, he had expressed some pretty strong skepticism about the science of climate change.
And by the way, to mention, he's head of NASA, so that's why.
Yeah, now he's head of NASA. Yeah. Now he's just been appointed as the administrator for NASA. And as recently as a month or two ago, he was giving a town hall meeting where he said, absolutely, you know, humans play a major role in a climate that is definitely changing. So and I think that was, you know, listening to the NASA scientists and other government scientists and reading, you know, government documents that make the case very strongly and nearly irrefutably. So I'm heartened to see that, you know, he's responded to that.
And President Trump's new budget had cut funding to the EPA and a lot of funding to climate change programs. With those kind of cuts, what do we lose?
We lose research missions. We lose satellites in space. And some of the best ways to see an evolving climate is to look at it from above. You know, we lose scientists to the private sector who may not do that kind of research anymore.
Is there a threat to any cuts to NASA's research in this area?
NASA's budget has been pretty flat for many years. And, you know, the partitioning between space science and earth science, you know, goes up and down. But there has not been a strong shift, no.
And you know, coming back Mr. Bernstein, you know, how's he looking at hurricanes now, especially with this upcoming season? What's he looking at? What's he thinking about?
I've never met him, so I don't know what he's thinking about exactly. I know that he's always been an enthusiast for weather forecasting, and NASA plays some role in there, although NOAA plays a bigger role. But NASA has satellites that are used for weather forecasting purposes. So I hope he's following the season. And so, you know, he's paying attention to particular storms and the particular hazard of a particular season. But also he's, you know, listening to his scientists who are telling him that there is a trend here and it's alarming.
What about you? What's on your horizon? What do you, you know, where's the research going?
I think the attribution studies are very interesting. These are studies where we can look at particular extreme events like Harvey, Maria, Irma, and we can start to say, yes, this was due to a changing climate. You know, 40% of the storm's damage we can attribute to a changing climate, for example. It used to be just as recently as a decade ago when people would ask us, is some particular extreme event due to climate change? And we would sort of hem and haw and say, well, you can never attribute any particular event to climate change, and now we simply say yes. And we say yes because the signal is popping out of the noise, but we also say yes because we've developed new tools, modeling tools, increased computer capability and better observations that allow us to, you know, decompose an extreme event to a part that we can assign to climate change and a part that might have been consistent with just natural variation.
You personally, what do you think we're going to be experiencing in the coming decades? What do you think is going to happen?
You know, it's not a matter of my personal opinion. It's a matter of, you know,
well,
the results. For instance, increased frequency of what people in Florida already see, what we call nuisance flooding, basically clear sky, no storm. You know, it's high tide. The ocean currents have some sort of chaotic variability. But with a higher baseline from sea level rise, suddenly, you know, you're getting flooding on your street of a foot or two, you know, six times a year. And that only, a few decades ago, that was only once a year. I mean, that's just nuisance flooding. It's not life-threatening, but it's damaging. But then, you know, we will see, you know, $100 billion events and, you know, insured and uninsured loss events that, you know, were previously thought to be, you know, once a century or less frequent, happening every few decades, you know, and that's not sustainable. You know, I mean, a couple hundred billion here, a couple hundred billion there, pretty soon you're talking real money, right? And we will have to look, we can mitigate by, you know, trying to bend the warming curve down a bit by, you know, increasing reliance on renewables. That's important. But we'll also have to adapt, because even if we stopped emitting greenhouse gases tomorrow, the oceans would go on warming for a couple of decades. That's an important point. So it's definitely going to be adaptation. So those two things are a combination that we should be doing. On the other hand, we can just do nothing and just suffer. But, you know, at some point after an event like Harvey, you know, which on a non-climate warming baseline, you know, might be like a 10,000-year event. It's never been seen, 60 inches of rain in a station in Houston. At some point when that happens, you know, every couple of decades, you know, if there's no planning and no infrastructure put in place, people will just retreat from the coasts.
We've been talking with Dr. Tim Hall. He's a senior research scientist with NASA. He's an adjunct professor at Columbia University. He's speaking again tonight at CSC Co-Working Space in Wynwood. That's at 6 o'clock. It's an event put on by Miami Climate Alliance. Dr. Hall, it's been a pleasure, man. Thank you so much.
Thanks so much. It's been a pleasure, too.